"Roundly, lads! Roundly!" Hector shouted down through the hatch gratings. The admonition probably wasn't necessary. The officers and men in charge of Destiny's main armament had undoubtedly heard Lieutenant Lathick's whistle almost as well as the carronade gunners on the spar deck weapons. Captain Yearley wasn't the sort to take chances on something like that, however. It was one of his fundamental principles that a competent officer did everything he could before the battle to minimize the chance of errors or misunderstandings. They were going to happen anyway, once battle was fairly joined, but a good officer did his best to see to it there were as few as possible, and that they didn't happen any earlier than they had to. And this particular evolution presented plenty of opportunity for things to go wrong. As the ship rounded up to windward, the seaman who'd been ostentatiously manning the weather carronades, as any wall-eyed idiot on the other ship could plainly see, turned as one and charged, obedient to Lathick's whistle, to the opposite side of the deck. The short, stubby carronades of the larboard battery, already loaded and primed, were run out quickly, in plenty of time, but the heavier gun deck weapons were both much more massive and far less handy. The good news was that no one aboard Archangel Chihiro had been able to see Destiny's gun deck. Captain Yearley had been able to send full gun crews to his larboard battery without giving away his intentions. Now the larboard gun port snapped open, gun captains shouted orders, and men grunted with explosive effort as they flung their weight onto side tackles. Gun trucks squealed like angry pigs as they rumbled across planking, which had been sanded for better traction, and the long, wicked snouts of the new model Krakens thrust out of the suddenly open ports. There wasn't much time to aim. Fortunately, HMS Destiny's gun captains had enjoyed plenty of practice. The world came apart in a deafening bellow of lightning-shot thunder. Sir Haram Welar had never imagined anything like it. To be fair, no one who had never experienced it could have accurately imagined it. He stood on the tall, narrow poop deck of his flagship, a deck little more than 40 feet long and barely 20 feet across at its widest point, and 27 heavy cannons exploded in a long, unending drum roll, spitting fire and blinding, choking smoke, as Destiny crossed Archangel Chihiro's stern and her broadside came to bear from a range of perhaps 50 feet. The two ships were so close together that Destiny's jibboom had actually swung across her enemy's poop, barely clearing Archangel Chihiro's mizzen shrouds, as she altered course almost all the way to northeast by east, and the concussive force of that many cannon firing at that shorter range, each gun loaded with a charge of grape on top of its round shot, was indescribable. He actually felt the heat of the exploding powder, felt vast invisible fists of muzzle blast punching his entire body with huge bubbles of overpressure, felt the fabric of his flagship bucking and jerking, slamming upward against his feet as if some maniac were pounding the soles of his shoes with a baseball bat as the Carisian fire crashed into her. Planking splintered, the glass of Archangel Chihiro's big stern windows simply disappeared, and the screams and high-pitched shrieks of men who'd been taken just as completely by surprise as Willar himself ripped at his ears, even through the incredible thunder of Destiny's guns. Cleared for action, Archangel Chihiro's gun deck was one vast cave, stretching from bow to stern. A cavern edged with guns, nosing out through the open ports, waiting for a target to appear before them. But the target wasn't there. It was astern of them, where the gunners crewing those guns couldn't even see it, far less fire back at it, and 6-inch iron spheres came howling down that cavern's length like Shan Wei's own demons. Half a dozen of the galleon's lizards took direct hits, their carriages disintegrating into clouds of additional splinters, the heavy bronze gun tubes leaping upward, then crashing back down to crush and mangle the survivors of their crews. Human beings caught in the path of one of those round shot were torn in half with casual, appalling ease. Splinters of the ship's fabric, some of them as much as 6 feet long and 3 or 4 inches in diameter, slammed into fragile flesh and blood like spears hurled by some enraged titan. Men shrieked as they clutched at torn and riven bodies, and other men simply flew backwards, heads or chests or shoulders destroyed in explosions of gore, as grape shot, each almost 3 inches in diameter, smashed into them. That single broadside killed or wounded almost half of Archangel Chihiro's crew.
"Bring her back off the wind, Weigand!"
The captain had to raise his voice to be heard, yet it seemed preposterously calm, almost thoughtful, to Chief Weigand.
"Aye, aye, sir,"
the petty officer replied sharply, and the wheel went over in the opposite direction as Destiny's rudder was reversed. The galleon didn't like it, but she answered like the lady she was. Her hull heaved awkwardly as she swung back to the west, across the waves, but Yearly had timed the maneuver almost perfectly, and the wind helped push her back around. Destiny came back before the wind, then swept even farther to larboard, taking the wind on her larboard quarter instead of her starboard beam, and her topsail yards swung with machine-like precision as they were trimmed back around. She'd lost a great deal of her speed through the water, and Archangel Chihiro's motion had continued to carry her away from Yearly's ship, along her earlier course. But there was far too much confusion aboard the Desnarian ship for Captain Abbott, or rather Lieutenant Martinson, since Rusail Abbott had encountered one of Destiny's round shot, to even consider altering heading. Her officers were still fighting to reestablish control after the incredible carnage of that first broadside, when Destiny swept across Archangel Chihiro's stern yet again, this time from northeast to southwest, rather than southwest to northeast. There hadn't been time for her gun crews to reload, but they didn't have to. The starboard guns had been loaded before they were run out, and even with so many hands detailed to man the braces, the starboard battery's officers had been left more than enough crewmen to fire the already loaded weapons. The range was much greater, well over 100 yards this time. Closer to 150, actually, but not enough closer to 150.